The Fan on Demand. He's the smartest guy in the room. We'll let you decide which one we're talking about. Brady and Walker. Now. On Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
The Blue Jays have some good players. Probably at least a 2 to 3 week gap before they get all their guys back. If they aren't able to succeed in that area, in this portion of the schedule right now, then maybe by the time they get back, it's too late.
As Sportsnet shied a VD yesterday on Tin and Sid, it is 8:03. Good morning, Brady and Walker on your Friday. Lead the edge of the weekend. Sunny today. What a great day. High 24 in the city of Toronto. Jays Rangers, 7 o'clock tonight. Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Rumors now, of an open roof tonight. Rumors.
Looks
speculation,
like
innuendo about an open roof this
now,
evening. So now, more people will be there.
The name we were mentioning before, if you haven't heard already, is that J.P. Arencibia, of all guys, making his return to the Rogers Center tonight. He was playing in AAA after being demoted by the Rangers early in the season, playing in Round Rock, Arkansas. I believe it's in Arkansas.
Texas.
Round Rock, Texas.
I'm thinking
Little Rock.
You might
Arkansas.
Be right.
Yeah. Anyway.
No, you might be wrong.
Arencibia is back. He's going to play first base.
Yeah, he's played 20 minor league games at first base. The Jays never utilized him there. Only a catcher, DH. So it's something new for him.
He's going to get booed big time, and rightly so. But is there any element of this fan base at all that wishes the guy well, hopes that he turns around his career and doesn't turn into a punchline and spars with media?
I'd love to know the answer to that. 416-870-0590, star 590, 888-666-0590. Fan 590 Walker on Twitter, Brady Fan 590. Please don't mistake this for the, you can't get lazier in radio, then will you boo Arencibia tonight? Because generally, yes, it's only people that call in will say, I will.
Of course he's going to be. Of course he's going to be.
It's like
booed.
Having
a move on.
When you have a complaint line for a company, you don't get compliments on the complaint line. We know he's getting booed. What we're asking is there any semblance of thinking, young guy, got a little too caught up in it? Because you think about who we respect as athletes, Andrew. And this guy never was arrested. This guy never was involved in some kind of a fracas with a teammate. He never got behind the wheel and did something stupid.
You're probably not going to put him in. He's weird, but I still wouldn't go in front of a judge and put my hand to the Bible and say he's a bad human being.
No, and that's the problem. But I will say this: I've rarely disliked an athlete in the city I've lived in more than Arencibia. And maybe it's because I think he's stupid and he should be smarter. And I always try and you're always trying to correct things in other people. Maybe that's a flaw I have. Maybe I do it more than other people. I think, why don't you get this? And I'm not always right, but I always have an opinion on something. And I go, how can you not see this? And for him to have been as tunnel vision, you know, brain dead as he was last year about I've played baseball and you haven't. So you can't tell me that I'm striking out too much. I've played baseball and
yeah,
you haven't.
I know.
So you have no idea what I go through and you are just fans. We know a lot of athletes feel that way. We know there's some condescension, but we don't I wouldn't tell how would I put it? I wouldn't tell. It's like telling a plastic surgeon. And I go, wow, that's amazing what you do. And me going, you know, but do it this way instead. I understand that could be a little frustrating for a guy in any career. You guys should do your show this way. You should be a policeman like I would be. But at the same time, he knows that that's part of the business. How does he not know that's part of the business?
And the Greg Zahn stuff added to it. And the thing,
yes,
maybe this is part of the flaw with how we view pro sports today as media and fans and as both, is that the fact of the matter is J.P. Arencibia had one of the worst statistical seasons in the history of Major League Baseball. And this was coming from a guy that has the ability to hit the ball long, hit the ball far, and put up decent numbers. We had seen it before in his career. If he had have had an okay to middling to average season, he could have been way more of a dick. And people are still forgiving him.
Yeah, they are.
People are fine with it.
Yeah.
But the first and foremost was the fact that he sucked. He sucked more than any suck in the history of sucking. That's what people care about.
It's that. We've had guys in Blue Jays uniforms. By the way, 416-870-0590. We'll get to your calls in a second. We have great worst tweet at 813 also. Star 590. You can text us 590-590. I would go to the mat and say, J.P. Arencibia, well, here, may be a better human being and nicer to people than George Bell was all the time or Dave Steeb was all the time. Maybe even Robbie Alomar all the time. Maybe even. But it's the whole... you don't get it, and I get it, and I do all this charity work, and here you are criticizing my 133 average, and I believe in God, and you shouldn't say that I should approach my, you can't wrap yourself up in all that stuff, and not get the idea that it's a bottom line business, and if you're doing great, fans will cheer you, and if you're doing bad, they're going to be on you a little bit, and the media as well plays a conduit in that, and would suggest. Hey, J.P. Arencibia is not carrying his weight, and other guys are.
416-870-0590, star 590 on your cell phone. It is fascinating because A-Rod bridged both, right? A-Rod is a terrible guy, and so when he is struggling mightily and goes 2-for-30 in the playoffs, there's a reason that he is the most polarizing, venomous type of figure in pro sports because you have the best of both worlds. And
that's it.
And for a brief time, yeah. This was kind of J.P. Arencibia.
Guy plays a little bit better. Team starts to win. He can own the town. Think about how many guys have rolled through here like that have that kind of potential. And he threw a lot of it away. He got nobody to blame but himself, but he doesn't get that. And I wouldn't think he'd ever get that. I think you are what you are by the time I don't think you have some amazing revelation about adulthood. You know, when you're 35, I think you're the kind of guy when you're 27, 28.
Look at Ricky Romero, right? Ricky Romero, things went south just in a hurry. And it was sad to watch. Ricky Romero is still, I would say, popular in this city. People want him. It's never going to work out anymore.
Yeah.
It's over in this city. But people still cheered for Ricky Romero even when he came back end of last season to pitch some relief innings because people wanted him to succeed. If he was a dick about it and sparred with the media and said, I don't know why they're trying to fix my mechanics. They're fine. I've played. You haven't. You don't know that I walked too many guys. If he did that, he'd be insufferable. But he never did.
Let's get to the phones. Jim in Toronto, 810, Brady and Walker on Sportsnet 590. The Fan. Go ahead, Jim.
Yeah, I mean, I'll be at the Blue Jays game tonight, and, you know, as a Blue Jays fan, of course I'm going to boo him because he had a terrible year last year, and he didn't handle it very well. But there is a small part of me as well that remembered that, you know, he did have a lot of really good moments for us, and none were bigger than, you know, his first major league pitch he hit out of the park, mm-hmm. and he had another home run that day. He's obviously got potential. As a baseball fan, I would like to see him turn around and have a good career. I always like a good story in that sense. So I'm, you know, the baseball fan side of me wants him to do well. Jays fan side of me obviously is happy if he continues to stink.
Now, that said, he comes up tonight and, you know, runs into an R.A. Dickey pitch and hits it out of the ballpark. He has the ability to do that. He's always hit home runs.
Sure.
Right? I mean, I think people will be mad. People want to see him go 0-for-4 and wear the sombrero tonight.
Well, especially it's a lot of it is very much he didn't leave as a superstar. He didn't demand a trade out of here. He would have very willingly come back and been the team starting catcher this year.
Oh, sure.
For 100. That would have been a good thing for him.
But unlike other guys, this is not about him spurning the team. This is not like, oh, you wanted to leave and now we hate you because you're LeBron James. Everyone couldn't wait to get rid of him.
I've always thought the Vince Carter thing was way more about the fact that trade was so badly botched than he wanted to leave. Nobody was until he said that stupid thing in that John Thompson interview. Nobody was accusing him of throwing games.
People don't like Vince Carter because of that interview.
But they also botched the trade, Andrew. If a very good player comes back here in exchange for Vince Carter and the team does well, you don't give that as much thought.
Yeah, but that's not what people focus on anymore.
I'm saying it would be because the trade was terrible because Babcock blew the trade.
Sure. But but then we should be over and done with because now the team is good. Now DeMar DeRozan, Kyle Lowry, people still dislike Vince because...
It's not quite as much. If he'd come back here this year as a free agent, nobody would have given a second thought. Nobody would be like, no, I do not want that man and his character and his morals on my team.
There would have been some of that.
Extreme, right? Tony in Brampton, you're on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Go ahead, Tony.
How are you guys doing this morning?
Good.
You guys just got exactly what I was about to say. The Vince Carter trade was the one that...
I actually booed because I go to all the Raptors games. And as far as Aaron Sibley goes, you know what? He never really did anything great for our team. So why would you boo the person? Let him at least get good. You know, I'd rather see him do well in his profession, just like I'd rather see every one of our players do good in their professions, right? You guys took my whole Vince Carter thunder out.
I didn't know it was coming.
That's okay. It's a good point.
That's all right.
It's a good point.
We made it equally as good as you, if not better. I'm choking you. Thanks for the phone call.
It's also different because, and this is a compliment to JP or Encebia, is because, hey, I was right in the mix, right? He comes up as a rookie, and he seems to get better as a player. He has crazy power, and you think this is the guy that's going to be your catcher of the future. And he might never be a 4-5 hitter, but he might hit you 240 and hit you 20 home runs in the catching position. That's Matt Wieters type of numbers.
It is.
Those are good numbers lower in the lineup. But he couldn't even get above the Mendoza line. He couldn't get on base.
You could have made the argument a year and a half ago, halfway through 12, let's say. There's an argument to be made for wanting J.P. Arencibia ahead of Matt Wieters if you were starting a team. There was an argument to be made for it. You also may be short-sighted. Alex Anthopoulos admitted as much, and I don't expect – I think it's great that a GM can say I made a mistake. Just shipping, getting Mike Napoli in the Vernon Wells trade, and then moving him out right away because you had J.P. Arencibia. Well, you don't know Mike Napoli's going to keep tearing it up and become an ALCS MVP, and you don't know that he'd be comfortable at first base and in the outfield wherever they had him. But you also don't know Arencibia is going to be off your team in two years either. He couldn't have predicted that. I don't blame Alex Anthopoulos for sticking with J.P. Arencibia until it was time to not stick with him.
Perception is so much of it. And for J.P. Arencibia, everything broke against him because people liked him. People expected him to be good. And Darren Mastriani sucks. Everybody knows it. No one wants to see him in the lineup, but he's here and he's quiet about it. No one hates him. He just can't play at this level. Right? It's different when you expect something of the guy.
All right, we got about a minute. Let's do worst tweet of the day.
Brady and Walker's worst tweet of the day.
You know, everything is not an anecdote. You have to discriminate. You choose things that are funny or mildly amusing.
We're also bringing up people who just don't get it. And around noon yesterday, it became apparent actor Jason Biggs, best known for American Pie.
Yeah, now he's on Orange is the New Black,
yes,
is his latest.
Unfortunately, it's been difficult for him to find roles where he doesn't masturbate. I think that as an actor, you don't... I mean, if Russell Crowe had had that trajectory...
Not a lot of people know he was actually the masturbating bear on Conan. That was him.
Thank you for saying that, and that was the best part of the first 2 years of Conan O'Brien. So yesterday, I mean, this is talk about low-hanging fruit. He drops, anyone want to buy my Malaysian Airlines frequent flyer miles?
Come on.
More. In all seriousness, how do you mistakenly shoot down a commercial plane? But later. But Malaysia Airlines is apparently a great airline. Going to be tough to recover. So no one appreciates jokes about airline tragedies. It's amazing how that works itself out, especially from unfunny human beings. So he then blames the people that are upset. Hey, all you too soon a-holes, it's a blanking joke. You don't have to think it's funny or even follow my Twitter page. Again, blame the victims, as it were.
Very J.P. or NCB of him.
He could play for the Round Rock Express.
Jason Biggs
with the Round Rock Express.
Good guy, bad tweet.
We don't even know that he's a good guy. We don't know that. We think his character is, but we don't know that.
8:15, Brady and Walker. Ian Leggett, our Sportsnet golf analyst, joins us next at 8:22 to talk about the British Open. Graeme Dillette, 3 over today. Is that enough to make the cut at Royal Liverpool?
Cooler than Math Club and almost as cool as Chess Club. The Fan Club. Log on to Sportsnet590.ca. Everything you're talking about, they're talking about. Brady and Walker on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Hey, 23, Brady and Walker on your Friday. No surprise here. We differ on a lot of things, and drinking on the golf course seems to be one of them. Ian Leggett coming up in just a minute or two.
I'm not trying to ban it. I'm telling you.
I know, but you seem very surprised that I would never play a golf round without having a couple of cold.
Drink off your ass.
If you're having the round of your life, again, like you're 3 under after 9, I don't know why you'd chance it by... You do realize it it reduces your reflexes.
No,
and your ability.
See, I'm making a big difference here between having one or two and having six. If I was having the round of my life, If I had a beer to calm my nerves, I'd play better. Better, not worse.
How many pitchers who have no hitters going after set? You think Josh
David
Beckett
Wells pitched
in?
A perfect game and could barely see.
Although
he was
Ellis,
so drunk.
Doc Ellis famously had a no hitter well on LSD. Try that on the golf course. Those yes. are harder. That's harder to ask the beer cart girl. Sometimes she has snacks. Rarely does she have hallucinogens.
See, I haven't played a dry round of golf in a decade, and you think I'm like Amy Winehouse or something.
Pick someone who's alive, for heaven's sake.
Ian Leggett.
It's been a hard week.
Ian Leggett joins us, our Sportsnet golf analyst. You're the wrong guy to ask, because you played on the tour for so many years, and I mean, you're not cracking, maybe some guys do, John Daly might, you're not cracking cold ones at the turn.
Well, apparently Walker's a tour player, so I'm not really sure what's going on in that studio there today, but I know both you guys need to be drinking when you're playing.
When we're doing the show. How many golfers at your, if you had a dry course, how many golfers say, thanks anyway, I'll find somewhere else that's just as beautiful, it's just as scenic to play?
Well, you know what, there's guys that do, they got the same thinking, you know, that you do. There's lots of guys that play the game of golf that just need, you know, a cold beer or something right before they go to the tee to kind of calm themselves down.
Yeah. And you can have four in the first 15 minutes after you finish your round, but not, you don't need one every three holes. Your game will get progressively worse.
Come on.
You don't think that.
Ian, be honest. You join up with three guys at your course and all of them say, no, we're not cracking a beer this round. You don't even trust them. Come on.
I don't know if I go that far.
They might be Russian spies. From
don't know if I'm going that far.
What did you make of... Sorry, go ahead.
Go ahead. No, I'm just saying, you know what, I mean, everybody's a little bit different, and you know what, there is an element of, you know, there's anxiety for people, and they go different ways when they're going to the first tee. Some people need a cigarette, some people need a beer.
Before we get to Rory, before we get to Tiger, what did you make of Graham Dillette's round today? I mean, three double bogeys and then an eagle. He was all over the place, and he might still make the cut if it comes down to three over. Do you think he could still get in there?
Well, the weather, I mean, is all dependent on what happens there this afternoon. I mean, he could, you know, by the end of the day, he might be well inside the cut line. He has struggled to date. So for one reason or other, not really quite sure what his issues is with major championships, but he's just got to start to get a little bit more comfortable. And maybe, you know, with Graham, I think it's the expectations of himself. I mean, he's become one of the best players in the world. I think his expectations are probably more of what he's getting out of his results in majors to date. And he's going to have to just get comfortable with how he approaches those weeks. And it's no different than what we've talked about him so far. As he once he breaks through, then we're going to see a completely different list of results from Graham.
Ian Leggett, our guest, of course, the golf show tomorrow with Scott Metcalf. Ian Leggett out of the gate at 7 o'clock, heading into round three from Royal Liverpool. I said this earlier. You tell me if I'm wrong. I mean, we're both set up in Ontario, and I said to Andrew, I said it feels like most golf fans probably feel like Graham Dillette's a lot younger than David Hearn. He isn't. There's only about a 2.5 year age gap, and I said, we've all heard about Hearn in Ontario for a good decade now. If we're paying attention, this could be a great result for him to make the cut, and especially after getting told Tuesday, well, you're in the tournament.
Yeah, I mean, he's the ultimate journeyman. He's hung in there. He's gone through, you know, the Canadian tour. He played the web.com tour, and he finally got it on tour. And the, you know, to credit to David is that he addressed about 5 years ago the issues he had with his golf game. He knew his short game was not good enough to play on the PGA tour. He got out on tour and he got beat up pretty bad. He drives the ball beautifully. Now he's added a little length to his game. He has worked extremely hard on his short game. That's the reason why the success is there. And a lot of guys, you know, that, especially later on in their career, which, you know, David got out there very late. That's when he decided, you know what, I got to start doing something about this because I'm playing with guys that are beating my brains in every single week, and I'm seeing where the sort of deficiencies in my game are. So he went to, you know, he hired Ralph Bauer, who actually is a great instructor here in Ontario, and he's worked very, very hard to get his game in tour condition. But, you know, we've seen some unusual victors at the British Open. And David Hearn, I mean, he's sitting in a nice position. Let's see how he plays today. But What's to say that, you know, David Hearn's not the next Todd Hamilton?
Tiger Woods fires a 69 yesterday, 3 under, and we've seen him make his return to tournaments after long absences, you know, a few times here in the last calendar year. And none of them have ever really went very well. He's missed the cut, you know, more than he used to, obviously, 5-10 years ago. Were you surprised with how much success he had yesterday?
I think a lot of people are. In fact, I think Tiger's probably, you know, surprised. I think a lot of people just, you know, everybody talked about it. I mean, I even mentioned on the air on Tuesday, I think that if he just makes the cut, I think coming where he's come from, I think that's a victory. But it's an interesting thing with tour players, and I think I'm not really sure how that evolves with other guys in other sports. Maybe when Guy laces his skates up one night, he just feels faster than he does any other night. But all it takes is one golf shot to mentally trigger the way it used to feel. And that's what I saw yesterday with Tiger Woods. There was no flinching. There was no anxiety or inhibition in any of the shots that he hit. He hit every shot with aggression, and it looked like, you know, the Tiger that played when he was not injured. There was no flinching or, you know, sort of any sort of second thoughts on his downswing that we used to see. And so, and I think that's just primarily because this guy's played with so much pain. I mean, he won the U.S. Open on a broken leg.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I think when you take all of those thoughts after he's kind of got into the round yesterday, and he probably hit 3 or 4 very aggressive shots, and he probably something went off in his mind. He says, you know what? This isn't going to hurt anymore. And we saw a completely different player yesterday afternoon.
It's amazing what comes out of a first round or any day at a major, and the highlights seem to be for most people the Ernie Els 3 putt. What I mean, from 12 inches, what went through your mind watching Bernie casually? I mean, here's a 4-time major winner doing what some guys do after having 4 Heinekens after 12 holes, right?
Yep. You know what? It doesn't matter where you're playing in the world. I mean, Ernie's always had an issue with his putting. People don't understand. I mean, he won the British Open, you know, playing with a belly putter. He switches around back and forth all the time. I mean, that's just a mental lapse. I mean, when a player does something like that, it's no different than, you know, the short putt that Scott Hoke missed to win the Masters. But it's just a mental lapse. It's not that big a deal. I mean, Ernie just washes that off. But, I mean, Ernie is, you know, he's been struggling. I mean, he's kind of in that sort of Phil Mickelson realm right now where he's kind of almost weaning his way out. We're going to see some victories out of both these guys, but I don't think we're going to see them contend significantly like they've done in the past.
It was almost the worst hole ever. He did that, and on the same hole, he drilled the fan. You ever drill someone off the
guy was
the
asking
T-box?
For it. He was asking for it, heckling him.
You ever drill anybody in your playing days?
Yeah, I did someone. Yeah, actually, it came back on the green, too, which is quite nice. But, you know, the British Open, I mean, there were a couple guys went down yesterday. Ricky Fowler took one guy out, too. But, you know, I guess that's the benefits of going to a PGA Tour.
We'll be listening tomorrow at 7 o'clock. Thanks for this, Ian.
Thanks, guys.
Ian Leggett from Sportsnet joining us.
See, it's dangerous. This golf ball is flying everywhere, but unlike, you know, those nerds at ballparks, if you're a grown man, you're not walking around Royal Liverpool with a baseball glove to protect yourself. Come on.
Yeah, but we've already been through the golf cleat controversy for guys wearing their best golf shoes walking around courses, whether it's a major or not. By the way, it's 15-year anniversary of the John Vandeveld.
I remember where I was.
I do too. Yep. And I was going out to play golf that day, and we're sitting there watching we had a tee time. We're sitting there watching in the clubhouse, and we're like, I think they backed everybody's tee time up because we saw this carnage going on.
Oh.
And we didn't stay for the playoff. We just thought, well, he won't win the playoff. But it's 15 years, and it's still that unbelievable moment. The best part is John Vandeveld's Wikipedia page has him like walking around in a forest, like he's looking for a ball. Like he's like, can you show another? Why do you have to have me all my pictures on Google with
because,
my pants rolled up in water?
You build 1,000 bridges. That's what he's known for. I want to say this is true, or maybe it's urban legend, but 15-year anniversary, didn't they take him back very recently? Because he needed a double bogey to win. And
I think he
played the hole with a putter. And made a double bogey.
What'd he do? He go driver off the tee.
He was looking okay until he put it in the water.
Yeah, he instead of laying up and hitting the green, he tried to go for the green. Hit the railing of the grandstand. It lands on top of the stone wall. But then, it's when he ends up, once he started taking the shoes and socks off. It's not, and yet the Phil Mickelson mistake is almost more a self-admission when he hit the food tent. and could have just laid up for a par to win his tournament.
Yeah, that one was...
That's not needing a double bogey.
That was just club selection. It's just don't pull out your driver. But you know what? I'll put them... They're almost equal. They're almost equal.
Well, but then he makes what? He made like a long putt for a triple bogey just to get in the playoff with Paul Laurie and Justin Leonard. So
the difference is that Phil Mickelson won before and he will win after and he'll continue to win. That was John Vandeveld's moment. That was his Kevin Costner, Tim Cup. Like, that was it.
It's his only top 10 finish ever. Amazing.
Incredible. 8:34, Brady and Walker. Jeff Blair in at 9 o'clock this morning. Kevin Love to the Cleveland Cavaliers. Is it worth giving up Andrew Wiggins? Not as simple as you think. We get into it next.
Back at it. Brady and Walker. Sportsnet 590. The Fan.
With the first pick in the 2014 NBA Draft, the Cleveland Cavaliers select Andrew Wiggins from Toronto and the University of Kansas.
8:42. Good morning. I'm Andrew Walker. He is Greg Brady. It is Brady and Walker taking you up until the Jeff Blair Show at 9. Cleveland does rock all of a sudden. Johnny Manziel, LeBron James, Andrew Wiggins. Although Andrew Wiggins might not be a Cleveland Cavalier by this time, I will say, next week.
Yeah, instead of finding snow on the ground 4 months of the year, he might find it 4.5 if he gets traded to St. Paul and has to play. Actually, it's downtown Minneapolis and has to play with the T-Wolves. So Kevin Love's got 2 years left on his deal. He's one of this big 2016 free agent class.
He's 25 years old.
Superstar. He is a superstar.
He went 26 points, 12 rebounds a game last year. That was better than I even thought he was.
So now the rumor from the News Herald in Northeast Ohio is LeBron James wants Love on the team, and he wants the Cavs to put Andrew Wiggins on the table and then make him part of a package. So it would take more than just Wiggins straight up, and wants to get Kevin Love on the roster. He went to the Olympics with him in London 2 years ago. And safe to say LeBron James often gets the teammates that he wants. Michael Jordan used to get the teammates that he wants. He just was able to stay in Chicago and do it. He had to sign off on Dennis Rodman. He had to sign off on trading Horace Grant. I would do this trade if I'm Cleveland. I would but you know what? I don't know what choice. Minnesota, maybe it is one of these fantastic trades for both teams. The Phil Kessel with Boston trade's been one of the most speculated on trades. Maybe, just maybe, it was a thumbs up for both teams. They both did the right thing at the right time for their future, be it short-term or long-term. Maybe this would be that kind of trade.
I want to get to the Cleveland aspect in a second, but let's start with Minnesota. If you're Minnesota, a package including Andrew Wiggins is a no-brainer.
If your guy's right? Leaving anyway, the team, listen, Kevin Love would go today and say, I want to re-sign. And then if that were the case, they'd call the Cavs and go, sorry, that everything's off the table. Because you got the proven commodity. Wiggins might be really good. And as you and I said, we don't know that date and time when Wiggins would be a better NBA asset than Love. But right now, is he? No. Next year in 15-16, will he be? Still also probably not. So when is it? And if Cleveland can grab an NBA ring in the process, their fans have nothing to complain about. Their city's got nothing to complain about. And any trade looks fantastic at that particular point. You don't get LeBron James and not go for it.
Yeah. And for Cleveland, okay, so they win the lottery. They weren't the worst team in the NBA, not by a long shot last season, but they win the lottery and get Andrew Wiggins. It's a coup. It's found money. And then more found money in free agent. We give up no assets to get him, LeBron James. So if you are the Cavaliers, your whole outlook has changed on this, right? If you're, especially in the Eastern Conference, you're more close to contending for an Eastern Conference title than you ever dreamed 6 months ago.
Yeah.
And as good as Andrew Wiggins could become, he's never going to become LeBron James, the guy you already have. You probably got to do it. Because you put Kevin Love on that team. Where does Cleveland fall in the preseason pecking order next season? Number one?
Probably the inch ahead of Chicago. And every prediction anybody makes about the Bulls is that Derrick Rose will be healthy. You have to make a prediction based on the fact you expect Derrick. Now, you don't have to bet that way. If it was your own money, if I was betting over-under totals with the Bulls and wins, They actually wouldn't. They won 48 games without 48. That's how bad the East is. We know this in Toronto. That's how, without Paul Gasol and without Derrick Rose, and they won 48 games. Could they win 60 with both of them? I don't know.
Well,
but I think they're the best team right now.
They could be way better of a team and win around the same amount of games.
But I found this fascinating because we were talking about first overall NHL draft picks. And so you've had some teams maneuver a little bit. Columbus went up to get Rick Nash. Obviously, there was the manipulation for Brian, in a good way, for Brian Burke to get two and three together to get the Sedins. So we brought up Nathan McKinnon, who was first overall last year in a deeper draft class. And I don't know that there's a great example. I'm trying to think of who it is. But there might be 10 players in the league. I don't know that there are 10 players in the league that you'd trade Nathan McKinnon for. You trade Nathan McKinnon for Sidney Crosby. If the Pens called, you'd do it.
Of course you would.
He's held. Now,
of course you would.
2 years ago when he's coming off his concussions, you might not. If you're worried about that. But if I said to you, would you trade Nathan McKinnon for, I'm trying to think of a 30-year-old guy, obviously you wouldn't for anybody that's on Vancouver's roster.
Well, you're not
looking
30, you're thinking 25. Kevin Love's 25.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah.
You need a 25-year-old player. But would I trade Nathan McKinnon for Jonathan Toews? I'm not sure about that.
Oh, come on.
I'm dead serious. I'm not sure about that. You want to give 7 years of output away. And forget the cap. I'm not even saying this financially. You're not even worried about the impact on your cap. But is it a no-brainer to trade a guy who's 8 years younger?
Would Colorado just say, hey, we're good? You know what? It's one of those things. Chicago wouldn't do it, and Colorado wouldn't do it.
So that's what I'm saying. It's the opposite here of teams that are really, I think what you're saying is you're pretty impressed NBA teams really put it out there and put it on the line when they move.
Well, okay,
these kind of commodities.
For me, number one picks are pretty undeniable. Scouting is so good, you are getting a franchise changer. Rick DiPietro was not that. But in the last 10 years, and we'll see, Aaron Ekblad doesn't move the needle as much as others. Has there been a guy in the last 10 years, other than Rick DiPietro, that was more than 10 years ago, that's really been, not great, pretty good? I think people are slow to come around on Nugent Hopkins, but he's going to be good.
Put it this way. If Toronto had traded up and wanted Ekblad in the worst way, and they had traded Riley and their eighth overall pick,
I wouldn't have liked it.
Right. And that's the idea of a number one commodity. But shift to last year with McKinnon, or if you want to fast forward to next year in McDavid.
Yeah.
And Crosby and Stamkos, Tavares even. It's a very different perspective. Maybe Claude Giroux is the example I'll use. If Philadelphia called Colorado and said, right now, today, would you trade us Nathan McKinnon for Claude Giroux? I wouldn't do it. Maybe that's more the Wiggins for Love comparable. Even though we've seen McKinnon play 80 games and he's pretty good. We saw him play two rounds.
We haven't seen Wiggins play yet. There's
right.
The difference.
Yeah. 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 I mean, no one expects him to be Darko Milicic. But for all this, Canadian LeBron, no one's saying that now. He might be a very good basketball player, though.
Here's the other side of it, and this is partly why, and maybe there's no way around it, but it's partly why I'm sometimes a little down on the NBA. It's because in the NHL, if you get a Crosby, a Stamkos, a Taylor Hall, that guy is the centerpiece of your organization. Jonathan Toews of the world, barring something funky happening like it did with Tyler Seguin. He's the centerpiece of your organization for the next 10 to 15 years. That's the plan. Everyone wants a Sakic. Everyone wants an Yzerman. In the NBA, superstars are going to free agency at a young age, and we get this guy, and we get this guy, and it doesn't work out. We trade you almost our entire starting lineup for your entire starting lineup. First-round picks are traded in every deal. Superstars in the NBA are, dare I say, easy to acquire.
They are. They are easier to acquire than in, I'd say, any other sport. I'd even include the NFL in that because just the best players, look at how many teams could argue they need a change of quarterback, and they always lock their guys up. San Diego always keeps Phillip Rivers. Dallas keeps Tony Romo. Chicago keeps Jay Cutler. None of these guys are A-list quarterbacks.
Well,
they're the second-tier guys.
NFL is weird because we don't see the first overall pick move. That it's a major deal if it is. And B, free agency is not a huge... I mean, it's a big thing in the NFL, but we're not seeing...
No, a guy doesn't report. But even... So next year, let's say we're a year from now and Kevin Durant quietly goes sort of Roy Halladay and says, "Hey, Oklahoma City, it's been fun. I've loved it, but I am going to accept. I'm not talking extension here." Well, they have to trade him. You can't risk getting nothing for Kevin Durant. And this is exactly what Brian Colangelo fought wrongly with Chris Bosh. It's like, hey, should we get in and get an 8 seed? No, trade him and get 2 first-round picks.
The only difference is OKC is never going to be fighting for an 8 seed. You're always going to go to the end with Durant. You're never trading him at the deadline. No.
Denver did it with Carmelo Anthony. I know what you're saying. You got a chance to win an NBA title.
If you're sitting first in the Western Conference, you're not trading Kevin Durant. You're not. You're not doing it. Never. No GM in the right mind would do that.
Oh, man. You can't let him walk for nothing.
Not if
you
you're can't first let him the, walk for nothing. If you're first in the West, are you kidding me? No team's ever done that. Well, and no team ever will do
that. Okay, what's Durant doing to you then? Is Durant playing footsie with you like Bosch was going, 50-50, maybe I'll stay, maybe I won't, but I don't want to talk about it right now. If he gives you an ironclad, guys, I'm out of here. I told you I'm out of here. And you're, you know, if you want to move me, move me. Get something. I have enough respect for you guys bringing me up through the ranks to get something. Go get something for me.
We're hypothetical, but guys like Sidney Crosby, Jonathan Toews, Steven Stamkos, they don't get to free agency ever. They don't get to free agency. LeBron James has been to free agency twice.
Yeah.
It's a different ballgame.
More like I said, the Giroux, Ryan Getzlaf, that's more the comparable for what Kevin Love is. And I could totally see if Anaheim called this morning and said, "We'll give you Ryan Getzlaf for Nathan MacKinnon." Well, I don't do it, but I know why Anaheim wants to do it. I know why Anaheim wants to do it. That makes perfect sense for Anaheim to want a guy who's a decade younger.
But again,
who looks transcendent.
Anaheim probably doesn't do it, and Colorado probably doesn't do it.
In this case,
Cleveland would do it.
Cleveland doesn't.
And so would Minnesota.
Because the guy's not staying. That's a big factor. Mike Wilner will be out of the gate with Jeff Blair at 9 o'clock this morning. Baseball is back, some huge games tonight. You got Baltimore starting in Oakland. The two wild card teams right now play each other, Angels and Mariners. So lots of scoreboard watching if you're a Blue Jays aficionado, Jeffrey.
Yeah, I guess the scoreboard watching kind of starts tonight. Easy schedule, relatively easy schedule for the Jays out of the gate.
Minus the Darvish thing.
Yeah, minus Darvish.
But they've beat them before.
Yeah, it's not the same Texas team we're sort of used to seeing. So
quickly, in about 30 seconds, Andrew said go over the next 14 games, and he said 7-7, you'd take that. I worry the Jays have got to be better than that. And I'm like Andrew, though. I'm worried they don't have the assets to be better than 7-7 right now as they're composed.
Yeah, I mean, I think you have to make ground up on the Orioles. And if you go 7-7 and they go 6-8 over the time, that's fine. But if you go 7-7 and they go 8-6 or 7-7, I think you've blown a big opportunity. If I'm the Jays, I'd like to go minimum 9-5 here. Minimum 9-5. And if you don't go 9-5, if you come out of the span of games and you're still 4 back, I don't know, man. That's going to be hard to make.
Can't let the Red Sox come in and win 3 or 4 next week. That kind of thing.
Jeff Blair Show coming up. Mike Wilner out of the gates. Have a good weekend.